Bone chilling greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from desolate desert to tropical island, from the cities that never sleep to cozy, sleepy resort towns, and everything in between. It is greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout out goes to
Burlington, New Jersey, Youngwood, Pennsylvania, and I apologize ahead of time, I will butcher this one, Ust Kamenogorsk, Kazakhstan, Del Rio, Texas. You know, there's just certain names that's fun to say, and well, Del Rio is one of them. One more time. Del Rio, Castleford, England, and Vredenburg, South Africa. Welcome to part two of the Barker Carpus Murderous Clan series. Now, last week you heard about the lineup of the career criminals that were the Barkers, Ma, Lloyd, Herman, Arthur, and Fred, and then, of course, Alvin Carpus. That was just a taste, my friends, a sample, if you will, of all of their wrongdoings. Today, I will touch on several crimes which left several innocent people dead, and two kidnappings as well, and so much more. Now, since there are so many people involved in this, I want to share somewhat of a timeline. Now, in 1910, Herman Barker is arrested for highway robbery in Missouri. He repeats this offense in 1915 and is arrested a second time. Both crimes take place in Missouri. Now, on July 4th of 1918, during a getaway, Arthur Barker runs over a child and is arrested. Now, I did not see anywhere that the child died, so here's to hoping he made a full recovery. Fingers crossed. Less than 2 years later, February 19th, 1920, Arthur is arrested in Missouri. January 15th, 1921, Arthur is arrested again, this time in Oklahoma for attempted bank robbery. And because of that, he calls Oklahoma State Prison his home for a little while. That very same year, yes, still in 1921, folks, Lloyd Barker is arrested in Oklahoma for vagrancy. 7 months after his arrest, August 16th of, yep, you guessed it, still in 1921, Arthur and a fellow thug are in Tulsa, Oklahoma at a construction site at a hospital when they murder a night watchman, a man named Thomas Sherrill. Thomas was at the wrong place at the wrong time. He was doing nothing wrong. He was working a shift at the hospital as a night watchman when he comes upon a group of men assaulting a woman. Even if you're not in law enforcement or a night watchman, whatever you are, you would still jump to a defenseless person's defense, right? I mean, a lot of people would anyways. And he just did what came natural. He intervenes, and sadly, he is killed for it. Arthur does time in Oklahoma State Prison for this senseless murder. Finally out of 1921, that was a wild year, and we dive right into the following year, 1922. Just 8 days into 1922, a shootout takes place, which leaves one of the thugs dead, and Police Captain Homer Spaulding will succumb to his gunshot wounds 10 days after the shootout. Officer Down Memorial Page shares this information. Captain Homer Spaulding succumbed to gunshot wounds sustained 10 days earlier when he and two other officers were engaged in a shootout with six members of the Barker Karpus gang. The officers had stopped to assist six men who were working on a stalled car at 3:30 a.m. Two of the men suddenly pulled out handguns and opened fire, mortally wounding Captain Spaulding and wounding one of the other officers. One suspect was also shot and killed. Captain Spaulding had served with the Okmulgee Police Department for 9 years. He was survived by his wife and son. He is buried in an unmarked grave in Green Hill Cemetery in Muskogee, Oklahoma. January 16th of 1922. Yes, just 8 days after the senseless murder of Captain Spaulding, Lloyd Barker heads to Leavenworth to serve a term after robbing a mail train in Kansas and will remain there until 1938, so he's there for a while. Good. In 1926, Fred is arrested after robbing a bank in Kansas and calls Kansas State Prison home for a little while. Now, while it's good that Lloyd was locked up for several years, too bad Fred wasn't in the same boat, because Fred is the most deadly, the most dangerous, alongside Karpus. You're going to learn more about that in just a little while. Now, on August 1st of 1927, Herman cashes stolen bank bonds and is stopped by Sheriff Deputy Arthur Osborne. Barker ruthlessly shoots the deputy in his face, and this proves fatal for the lawman. I again quote Officer Down Memorial Page, a page that I've been following for over a decade, it seems. Quote, Deputy Sheriff Arthur Osborne was shot and killed along U.S. Highway 30, 2 miles west of Pine Bluffs, while attempting to arrest a man wanted for cashing stolen bonds at a bank in Cheyenne. Deputy Osborne waved the suspect's car down, and as he approached, the man picked a gun off of the seat and shot him. The man was the son of the infamous female criminal, Ma Barker. On August 27th, 1927, he shot and killed patrolman Joseph Marshall of the Wichita Police Department, Kansas. Deputy Osborne was survived by his wife. He is buried in Pine Bluffs Cemetery, Pine Bluffs, Laramie County, Wyoming. So it's unbelievable to me that Herman Barker murders two lawmen in less than 1 month. I just read Deputy Sheriff Osborne's memorial. 26 days later, another lawman would be murdered, patrolman Joseph Marshall. Officer Down shares this. Patrolman Joseph Marshall was shot and killed near the intersection of Broadway Street and 11th Avenue when he and his partner stopped a vehicle whose occupants they recognized as members of the Ma Barker gang. As patrolman Marshall approached, the driver pulled him into the vehicle and shot him 3 times, killing him. His partner was able to return fire and mortally wounded the driver. Despite the wound, the driver was able to drive a short distance away before crashing. The man then committed suicide. One of the other subjects in the vehicle was shot and killed the following day. The third subject was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. Patrolman Marshall had served with the Wichita Police Department for 2 years. He was survived by his wife and 2 children. He is buried in Wichita Park Cemetery and Mausoleum, Wichita, Kansas. Just 2 days after the brutal murder of patrolman Marshall, Herman is pulled over by law enforcement and he takes his own life. March 30th of 1931, Fred Barker is released from prison. Less than 3 months later, both Fred and Creepy Karpus are arrested and miraculously, both avoid lengthy sentences. That's terribly unfortunate, and I think the victims who would die by their hands would agree with me. On November 8th, 1931, another lawman is murdered. This time, it's Arkansas Police Chief Manly Jackson. Officer Down shares this about this fallen officer. Chief of Police Manley Jackson was shot and killed along Highway 79, modern-day Route 115, 2 miles north of Pocahontas. Chief Jackson was serving as a night marshal and was writing down the license plate of a suspicious car when he was kidnapped by members of the Barker Carpus gang. He was driven to a nearby quarry and was allowed to get out and walk a little way before he was shot 4 times and killed. His body was found the following day. 2 months later, the shooter shot and killed Sheriff Roy Kelly of the Howell County Sheriff's Department, Missouri. The suspect was eventually shot and killed by FBI agents. Now, while the memorial page said that it was 2 months between the chief of police murder and the sheriff's murder, it was actually just a day shy of a month and a half. These guys were out of control, no doubt about it. Now, on December 19th of 1931, the murderous duo, that is Fred and Alvin, Barker and Carpus, they rob a store in Missouri. And in the process, yes, this is when Sheriff C. Roy Kelly is shot and killed. Here's what Officer Down shared about him. Sheriff C. Roy Kelly was shot and killed by 2 members of the Barker gang while investigating a suspicious car. One of the suspects was responsible for the murder of Chief Manley Jackson of the Pocahontas Police Department in Arkansas. This suspect, which, spoiler alert, that was Fred Barker, was later shot and killed by FBI agents. The second suspect was apprehended and committed suicide in 1979. Sheriff Kelly was survived by his wife. On April 26th, 1932, the body of Ma Barker's common-law husband, Arthur Dunlap, is found, his body sharing a tale that he was brutally murdered. His murderers? Fred and Alvin. Boy, these two dudes sure stay busy, don't they? In June of 1932, the gang heads to Kansas, where they successfully rob a bank. July 26th, that same year, they rob yet another bank in Kansas. On August 13th, 1932, an attorney connected to the first Kansas bank robbery trial, well, he's found murdered. Apparently, he was defending one of the bad guys who ended up being convicted, and he paid for that conviction with his own life. Before the year would end, there would be more senseless killings. On December 16th of 1932, the gang, well, they're involved in a bank robbery in Minneapolis, which found 2 lawmen and 1 civilian dead. Officer Down shares this about the 2 lawmen. Patrolmen Leo Gorski and Ira Evans were shot and killed when they responded to a bank robbery in progress at Central and East Hennepin Avenues. As they exited their patrol car, 2 of the suspects opened fire on them with a shotgun and machine gun. Both officers were fatally wounded. The suspects escaped but were eventually apprehended. One of the shooters was also responsible for the murder of Marshal John Rose of the Kirksville, Missouri Police Department on November 17, 1930. The suspect was sentenced to life in prison. In 1934, the suspect was believed to have gone insane and was transferred to a state hospital. 2 years later, he led an escape of 15 inmates and continued to rob banks. On July 8, 1936, he shot and killed Officer Cal Palmer of the Enid, Oklahoma Police Department after getting drunk in a local bar. Patrolman Gorski was a United States World War I veteran and had served with the Minneapolis Police Department for 11 years. He was survived by his wife and son. He is buried in Sunset Memorial Park Cemetery, Minneapolis, Minnesota. On April 4th, 1933, the Barker Carpus gang, along with the Dillinger gang, oh, that's nice, they're making friends, they rob a bank together in Nebraska, and one of the thugs would get injured and succumb to his injuries. Karma, as my little nephew would say. It's the summer of 1933. It's a nice June day. William Hamm comes from a successful and wealthy family. You see, he was the heir of Hamm's Brewing Company. William Hamm Jr. was the president of Hamm's Brewery when, in broad daylight, as he left his office for a much-needed lunch break, he is kidnapped in broad daylight in St. Paul, Minnesota. Ham was ambushed by four men and forced into his own vehicle. They cross state lines, entering Wisconsin, where they begin working on a series of ransom notes. They demand $100,000. Today, that's over 2.5 million big ones, my friends. The family would go on to pay, and it's delivered, and the kidnappers, true to their word, unlike Coors kidnapper, of course, and they release William Ham Jr. on June 19th. He was with them for a total of 4 days, but I'm sure that felt like years. DNA on the ransom note would help seal the kidnappers' fates. Ham would go on to become the chairman of Ham's in 1952 and die 19 years later in 1970. Was Ham's kidnapping planned? You bet your ass it was. I quote Minnesota Good Age. While many breweries went under during Prohibition and the Great Depression, Ham's persisted. In 1933, it was one of the country's most profitable breweries, making its president an attractive target. The gang carefully planned Ham's kidnapping, even bringing in a strategist from Al Capone's Chicago syndicate to help. Fred Barker and Alvin Karpis frequently told Ham to study his habits and case his Cable Avenue mansion. They also offered a St. Paul police officer $25,000 of the ransom money in exchange for keeping the gang a step ahead of the police. At 12:45 p.m. on June 15th, Ham left his office and was stopped by a man who reached to shake his hand, asking, "You are Mr. Ham, are you not?" Ham was steered to the curb and pushed into a waiting car. The gang drove to a hideout in Bensonville, Illinois, and when asked to name a trusted intermediary between the gang and his family, Ham chose his brewery's sales manager, William Dunn. When the ransom demand came, Dunn called the police, and the FBI quickly got involved as well. The gang communicated their demands through typed ransom notes, and it soon became clear that they were anticipating the police's moves. When cops considered setting a trap at the ransom drop spot, the next note demanded Dunn remove his vehicle's doors and hang a red light to prove no one was hiding inside. On June 17th, Dunn drove to the instructed drop spot on a highway outside of Pine City, waited for 5 headlight flashes, and then placed $100,000 on the side of the road. 2 days later, Ham was released in a farm field 50 miles north of St. Paul. So, okay, what's interesting to me is that these guys were brazen enough to actually bribe a law enforcement officer. And it seemed like they were always ahead of the police. It's like, did this officer end up getting caught? Which you would think so. You would hope so. You would pray so. Because, you know, let's face it, this was a long time ago. $25,000 to me is still a lot today. But back then, wow, that's a small fortune. They didn't really say much else about that. But I was like, okay, wait, hold the brakes. Tell us more about this. So on August 30th, 1933, the gang robs a bank in Minnesota. And in a result of this, yet another law enforcement officer loses his life. Policeman Leo Pavlak. Officer Down reports this. Patrolman Leo Pavlak was shot and killed during a robbery at a payroll while exiting the post office on Concord Street in South St. Paul. Patrolman Pavlak was escorting two messengers from the post office when a car pulled up, emitting a lot of smoke, and two subjects got out. Patrolman Pavlak complied with their orders to put his hands up. At that time, another patrolman came around the corner, and the men opened fire on him, striking him several times. Then, without warning, the man covering Patrolman Pavlak shot him in the head with a shotgun. The shooter was Arthur Barker, brother of Fred Barker of the infamous Barker-Karpis gang. Patrolman Pavlak had served with the South St. Paul Police Department for only 4 months. He was survived by his wife and 2 children. His son served as a St. Paul police officer, and 2 of his grandsons and a great-grandson also served with Minnesota law enforcement agencies. He is buried in Calvary Cemetery in St. Paul, Minnesota. The post office was renamed the Officer Leo Pavlak Post Office in his honor. So, they mention another police officer before Pavlak being shot several times, but they didn't say that he succumbed to those injuries, so I'm hoping that he was able to make a full recovery. But this poor man, only with the force, with that department anyways, for 4 months, not even half a year, when he's just brutally gunned down. And the thing is that he surrendered. He was like, okay, I'm done. That's fine. He complied with the orders. His hands were up. He was just there. But it is excruciatingly clear that these men hate law enforcement, hate with a passion. And the bodies they leave behind in their wake, well, that proves that. So it doesn't matter if this officer surrendered, if his hands were up. They could care less. Very cold-hearted, very, very horrible. So less than a month later, on September 22nd, 1933, a bank robbery in Chicago leaves, you guessed it, another policeman murdered. Again, I read from Officer Down memorial page. Patrolman Miles Cunningham was shot and killed while investigating a car accident shortly after 12:15 a.m. He and his partner were just starting their beats and were standing at the southwest corner of South Halsted Street and West Adams Street when they observed the crash. Both officers ran toward a Hudson that had collided with a Ford coupe at the intersection. Unknown to the two officers, the occupants of the Hudson had just robbed 2 Federal Reserve messengers moments before. Patrolman Cunningham approached the Hudson as his partner approached the Ford. As the occupants of the Hudson exited their vehicle, one of them opened fire on Patrolman Cunningham, killing him instantly. The man who fired the shots was Brian Bolton, a member of the Barker-Karpis gang. The other occupants of the car were Alvin Karpis, Fred Barker, Doc Barker, Shotgun George Ziegler, and Brian Bolton. Of the gang, Karpis was arrested on May 1, 1936. Doc Barker and Brian Bolton were arrested separately on January 8, 1935. Fred Barker was killed in a shootout with the FBI in Florida on January 16, 1935. Shotgun George Ziegler was murdered by fellow gangsters in Chicago on March 10, 1934. Patrolman Cunningham was survived by his wife and 2 children. January 17th of 1934, a kidnapping order by an organized crime boss named Harry Sawyer was conducted. Recruited was the Barker-Karpis gang, among others, to kidnap the president of Commercial State Bank and heir to Schmidt Brewing Company. Again, another person involved in a brewery or brewing company. It's just mind-boggling to me. And like William Hamm a few months earlier, he is taken off the streets of St. Paul, Minnesota. Edward had literally just dropped off his daughter off at her school when he was approached by a group of strange men. He was then attacked, blindfolded, and thrown into his own car. During the attack, he was injured where it caused him to bleed. The kidnappers were angry because the car would not start, but with the help of the victim, eventually does, and they later abandon his car and steal another one. Well, it's kind of like a scene out of a movie. When the authorities find the missing man's car, they find blood in it, and they think, oh my God, he's a dead man. Bremerton is held captive in Illinois, and a ransom of $200,000 is demanded. Well, I guess that's what happens when just months earlier, you kidnap somebody, get the $100,000, and it's like, well, hey, shit, man, let's do this again, and let's double that amount. Right. Today, that 200,000 is over $4.8 million. Edward was terrified, as these men who were demanding a ridiculously large sum of money were not only threatening his life, but the lives of his beloved family if he did not cooperate with them and if he talked to the authorities. A lot was hanging over this poor man's head. Adolf Bremer, who is Edward's father and the owner of Schmidt's Brewery, would not give any money until he received proof of life. This resulted in Edward writing a letter, basically pleading for his life to be saved so he could be reunited with his family. When Papa Bear tries to lower the amount of money, this infuriates one of the Barker brothers, the most deadly, by the way, Fred, the most out of control. And Fred demands to the others that, hey, fuck it, let's just kill this guy. Well, thankfully his brother, Arthur, and Carpus did not think that was totally necessary, and they talk him out of it. Now, mind you, Arthur and Carpus are cold-blooded killers, so why they just were against killing this person, I don't know. But I'm glad that they were against it, and I'm sure that Edward was too. So the ransom is paid, and I'm unsure of the amount. I'm unsure if it was lowered or if it was the full 200,000. And like William Hamm, the kidnapped victim before him, Edward Bremer was released. He would be released a few weeks later on January 17th, 1934. The kidnappers were in the wind, and the FBI were interrogating and questioning Bremer, who, due to dealing with threats on his family if he cooperated with authorities, he refused to share anything. But then the FBI did some threatening of their own, and he ended up sharing what he knew about the culprits. I mean, you just have to feel bad for this guy. He is a total victim. He knows that these guys are capable of some really bad shit, and they threatened his wife and kids and his dad and everybody that he loves. Of course he's going to be terrified to spill the beans. I would. Not only was he being threatened by the bad guys, but now the good guys, the authorities, were threatening too, saying, you better tell us stuff or you're going to pay the price. I mean, it was a lose-lose situation. But, you know, his father was a man who had connections, including being dear friends with President FDR. Now, on January 19th of 1934, just 2 days after the release of kidnapped victim Edward Bremer, a case of mistaken identity gets a man savagely attacked when the gang believes him to be a police officer. He was not. In early April of 1934, a former member of the Barker Carpus gang, and now with the Dillinger gang, squeals like a pig, sings like a canary, burps like Homer Simpson to the feds, releasing much-needed information about his former gang, the Barker Carpus gang. And let's just say that it goes downhill from there for the remaining gang. Now, on January 8th of 1935, Arthur, he's arrested. And a little over a week later, on January 16th, Ma, also known as Arizona, also known as Kate, also known as supposed innocent woman, and her extremely murderous son, Fred, they find themselves in a shootout with authorities and are killed in their house. That shootout was almost 5 hours long. I mean, wow. Talk about exhausting. On November 7th of 1935, the gang robs a mail train. And on May 2nd of 1936, Alvin Carpus, also known as Creepy Carpus, is arrested in New Orleans. January 13th of 1939, Arthur gets himself killed trying to escape Alcatraz. So a lot of stuff going on over here right now. Ocala Marion paints a scene at the house where Ma and Fred breathed their last breath. The home was quiet, nestled back from the street with the view of Lake Ware, the fifth largest lake in Florida. The Bradfords built the home as a weekend and summer retreat from Miami. Carson Bradford had never rented his house when, in late 1934, he got a surprisingly generous offer from a representative of a Mrs. T.C. Kate Blackburn. yet another alias, folks, describing her as a sweet little old lady. And she was looking for an out-of-the-way cottage to spend some quality time with her sons. They needed a place to rest and recoup away from the cold northern winter. Bradford said the house wasn't for rent. Not willing to accept no for an answer, the rent offer went up, with an offer to pay cash in advance for the entire season. It is the only time the house was ever rented, says Carson Good, Bradford's great-grandson. 2 months later, the Bradford house was riddled with bullets and is the scene of the longest FBI shootout in history. Only when the shooting was over did Bradford learn the true identity of his tenants. He had inadvertently rented to the notorious gangster Ma Barker and her son Fred. It was the FBI they were fleeing. They had zeroed in on them as public enemy number one after the FBI caught and or killed John Dillinger, followed by Al Capone and Pretty Boy Floyd. The Barker Carpus gang knew Hoover was coming for them next, so finding the hideout overlooking Lake Ware was a smart move at that time. Unquote. I mean, isn't that horrible? This family makes this home, which should be a safe haven and a getaway for them, you know, to get away from the hustle and bustle of the big city, and never even thought in their wildest dreams to rent it out to anybody. But money talks, and it's like, okay, man, that sounds too good to be true, and you're going to give cash up front right away for the entire season? Okay, sure, why not? I mean, it is a vacation home. It's not like we live here 24/7. But by golly, they sure regretted that decision, and I'm sure never did that again. Poor guys. I mean, that just is so sad. Now, before I end things, I want to read a small bit of voicesofsouthmarion.com as they also discuss the setting, this house, this what shouldn't be known as infamous house, but the scene of the longest FBI shootout with this house, with this family, with this deranged gang who was responsible for so many deaths. And I quote now, "Oklawaha, a quiet town that prides itself on its unassuming charm, might not be the first place you'd think to find the FBI's longest gun battle. But back in January of 1935, the sleepy streets became the backdrop for a historic showdown with Ma Barker and her notorious gang. With over 1,500 rounds of ammunition flying through the air, Fred Barker and Ma met their end at the hands of federal agents. For years after, Oklawaha residents would tell stories of standing by and watching as history unfolded before their eyes. And the house where it all happened? Well, it still stands, albeit a bit worse for wear, with its bullet-riddled walls bearing silent witness to that infamous day." Unquote.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others, they're all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to grab a tissue and cry about it, my friends. Just head over to any of those terrific podcast platforms, such as Deezer, Spotify, CastBox, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everybody, and
I will see you next week.